The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. China tests a hypersonic missile, and the Democrats' response is a yawn.
Frankly, the Democrats have been the party of military weakness for decades now.
And the White House reaction is even worse.
We welcome stiff competition.
We'll look at the latest migration towards the U.S. border.
What grounds do we have to tell Panama or Costa Rica to stop this flow of people when we're the ones who are sucking these people in and giving them the incentive?
And why would a football star run for the United States Senate?
I'm fighting for something that's much, much bigger than Herschel Walker.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me, please, on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. And follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. A new report revealed China tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile in August. The missile, which travels at five times the speed of sound, circled the globe after entering space on the top of a Long March rocket. What makes it particularly dangerous is that the U.S. has little or no defense against this type of weapon. China, a communist country with vastly different goals than we have established here in the United States, is moving ahead with their dangerous technology, while Democrats plot trillions of dollars in additional spending, some of which could be used to deal with this menace, none of which is. For decades, we have slept well at night knowing that we live in the most peaceful nation on the planet. But we have become complacent or indifferent while China and others continue on a path of power that threatens the stability of the world around us. I spoke this week with Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton. How significant is a hypersonic in space?
Pretty significant, Hugh. Again, it's not shocking that the Chinese have been working on these hypersonic missiles. That's been known for a while, as is the United States. We're still more advanced than China is, but China, as they are in so many other cases and their military buildup, is closing the gap. The main difference for probably the purpose of your audience, you between a hypersonic glide missile and a ballistic missile, is that hypersonic glide missiles are designed to evade ballistic missile defenses. Ballistic missiles follow a normal trajectory. You know, it's just like if you watch a crime procedural drama and they talk about the ballistics of a bullet. Same thing with a rifle. Same thing with a missile. It goes up. It comes down in a predictable pattern. That's what allows missile defense to work. Hypersonic glide vehicles are able to move at a much faster rate of speed and to take evasive or unpredictable maneuvers. So it's not surprising that China is pursuing these because they want to be able to strike and hold at risk all of the continental United States.
Now, the only response to hypersonics is either MAD, mutual assured destruction, by having our own that can do at least as much as theirs can, or an undetectable, indestructible nuclear deterrent, such as the Columbia class might present, or directed energy weapons, which I understand are at least 5 years away. Does this announcement or this scoop make it more likely that the Democrats will pause in their rush to spend at least $1.5 trillion and put some of that in the national defense, Tom Cotton?
Well, Hugh, I wish that were the case, but frankly, the Democrats have been the party of military weakness for decades now, going back to the Vietnam War and then Jimmy Carter and on through Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden, like clockwork. When Democrats take power, they cut the military and they waste money on welfare programs and on their clients and their patrons. So you would think that China conducting such a rapid military buildup would have been a wake-up call to the Democratic Party for a long time. Just not the case, though, Hugh. They don't understand that strength is what matters in foreign policy, because only the strong can survive in a dangerous world. And for that matter, only the strong can protect the weak, and only the strong can afford to be merciful.
Now, am I not correct that any single Democrat or Angus King independent from Maine, who caucuses with him. And I like Governor King, Senator King, a lot. Or Jack Reed, who is allegedly a hawkish kind of. Could not any single Democrat insist that part of this massive fire hose of additional spending they are poised to pour out on the United States include Columbia-class funding or hypersonic or directed energy weapon funding?
Yes, Hugh, in principle, you are correct, because the Democrats only have a 50-50 Senate controlled the agenda only by virtue of Vice President Harris's tie-breaking vote. But for any Democrats, even those you mentioned who are serious at times about our national security, to hold up the Democrats' massive welfare bill and Green New Deal to demand more military spending would be about as popular in the Democratic Party as holy water is to vampires.
But, you know, at some point, well, maybe not at some point. Let me play you Jen Psaki yesterday for our audience who has not yet heard. I played it a couple of times. She gets a question on the hypersonics. Cut number 17, Jen Psaki at the White House yesterday.
Can you comment on reports that China tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile over the summer to the surprise of U.S. officials? Are these accurate, and do these raise concerns about China's nuclear capability?
Well, I know General Secretary Austin, I should say, was asked this question this morning and addressed it, but I'm not going to comment on the specific report. I can say and would echo what he said, which is generally speaking, we've made clear our concerns about the military capabilities that the PRC continues to pursue. And we have been consistent in our approach with China. We welcome stiff competition, but do not want that competition to veer into conflict. And that is certainly what we convey privately as well.
Now, Senator Cotton, we welcome stiff competition has never exactly been the Democratic line on arms control and nuclear weaponry. But if we're going to have stiff competition, it's going to take some money. So what is it? Are we giving up or are we going to compete?
Hugh, first off, I'd like to address this common rhetorical turn of Joe Biden's administration. The president himself has said on numerous occasions that we welcome the competition or we're not afraid of vigorous competition. Hugh, this is not like some Olympic matchup of figure skaters or basketball teams where you go out and you compete in a game and then you all shake hands and hug on the medal stand afterwards. This is a struggle for mastery of the world, in which life or death are the stakes. So for these Democrats to keep saying we welcome the competition is the height of folly. We don't welcome the competition. We'll see who the best team is, and maybe we'll play a best of seven series the way they're doing in Major League Baseball right now. We want to beat China. China is waging a Cold War against us. Part of that Cold War is the military buildup, not just these hypersonic glide missiles, but the new missile silos they're building in Western China, fortifying their air force and naval capabilities just across Taiwan on the Taiwan Strait. These are all of a piece with their efforts to replace the United States as the world's dominant superpower. And it's time to get rid of this idea that it's just a friendly competition in a game and face the facts that we have to win this Cold War. Otherwise, we will lose it by default.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has had her share of confusing moments before the media. I spoke with the New York Times White House correspondent Michael Shear about the latest. Now I want to go to a Jen Psaki whopper.
Can you comment on reports that China tested a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile over the summer to the surprise of U.S. officials? Are these accurate, and do these raise concerns about China's nuclear capabilities?
Well, I know General Secretary Austin, I should say, was asked this question this morning and addressed it, but I'm not going to comment on the specific report. I can say and would echo what he said, which is generally speaking, we've made clear our concerns about the military capabilities that the PRC continues to pursue. And we have been consistent in our approach with China. We welcome stiff competition, but do not want that competition to veer into conflict. And that is certainly what we convey privately as well.
We welcome stiff competition caught the eye of every person who follows nuclear weapons and especially hypersonics, Michael Shear. Did that sound like a clunker off of your ear when you heard it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, welcoming stiff competition is what you normally think of in terms of perhaps, you know, development of consumer technology or something that, that doesn't have national security implications. It's hard to imagine the administration truly welcoming stiff competition when it comes to, development of nuclear weapons or advanced, you know, advanced deployment systems of nuclear warheads. I mean, it's so, yeah, that seemed to me to be an odd way of phrasing that, for sure.
So does the press corps generally get, in your opinion, Michael, the significance of the orbiting of a hypersonic off of a Long March rocket? It is a game changer at the Sputnik moment. Does the White House press corps get that?
You know, probably. I mean, it depends on what you mean by the White House press corps. There are certainly people in the White House press corps, and I don't actually necessarily consider myself one of them, who are, you know, who are more expert, more, you know, closely follow the kind of national security implications of this kind of, you know, development and really follow the kind of daily and, you know, developments of that part of the world. You know, the White House press corps were a bunch of generalists, right? Some of us know more, in my case, for example, about immigration, right? I wrote a book about immigration. Other people might know, you know, more about congressional legislation or gun policy or whatever. And so I think that sometimes when these kinds of things come up in the briefings, I think we all try to keep abreast of what's going on in the world, but we're not going to catch at that moment everything. I think what you hope is, you know, I work at a news organization, for example, that has a broad range of people who have really dive deep into all different subjects. And so, you know, you hope that by the end of the day, the people who, who might kind of understand more deeply the significance of that kind of thing have sort of noticed it, and that, you know, the paper as a whole, the organization as a whole, doesn't miss the significance.
Now, when Sputnik went up, no American was unaware by the end of that day that there's a little spherical satellite. So a hypersonic, which travels at 5 times the speed of sound, being launched and orbiting the Earth and coming within a couple of dozen miles of its intended, means we've been lapped. Not only lapped, we've been lapped a couple of times on a critical technology. And it ought to start a scramble. It ought to evoke something from the White House other than General Secretary Austin said this, and we welcome a stiff competition. But will it be a matter of, or do you expect it to be a matter of focus?
Maybe. I mean, you know, sometimes it takes a little time for this kind of thing to sink in, as you say, both at the White House, but also among reporters. You know, sometimes we, you know, it takes a little bit of, understanding of what something really means before we kind of get it. So maybe it'll come back today and play a more prominent role.
Coming up,
I'm fighting for something that's much, much bigger than Herschel Walker.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The media quickly forgot about the thousands of migrants who crowded under a bridge in Texas after the Biden administration gave them reason to believe they'd be welcome here. The media quickly forgot about the thousands of Haitian migrants who crowded under a bridge in Texas. They had come thinking that the Biden administration was going to open the border to them. The administration did not learn their lesson from the mess that ensued, and more now are on the way. Bob France spoke with Mark Kerkorian, the Center for Immigration Studies, on AM 1420, The Answer, out of Cleveland, Ohio.
Drone video of the gathering of the tent cities all coming together in Panama for a planned journey, a sojourn through, you know, Central America, through Mexico, and once again up to the United States border. And why would they not? Why would they not, when they saw what happened to the 20,000 or so that were gathered under that bridge just last month? And why would there be any stop to this whatsoever? Why would there even be a slowdown in this whatsoever when around the world the signal has gone out? America is open for the taking.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Panamanian government is basically screaming for help because Biden's open border policies are basically sucking in migrants from all over the world. They start in South America, often in Ecuador, because it has really loose visa rules, and then they make their way up. Well, if you look at a map, Panama's this little strip of land, and everybody has to go through it if they're going to be going from South America by bus or on foot to get to our border. Panama's not a big country. It's getting overwhelmed by this. And what they're saying is, you know, give us a break. Because under Trump, we were twisting the arms of a lot of these countries to our south to work with us to limit the flow. We were basically all rowing in the same direction, if you will. In other words, we were trying to reduce the magnet and also trying to get them to stop the flow. Under Biden, the magnet is turned on. It's, you know, it's worth it to take these risks because he will let you go, especially if you have a kid with you. That's a magic ticket to be let go. But we're trying to pressure these countries to stop the flow that we are responsible for creating. By we, I mean the Biden administration. And the question is, why, you know, what grounds do we have to tell Panama or Costa Rica to stop this flow of people when we're the ones who are sucking these people in and giving them the incentive to overwhelm these little countries?
But that's exactly the strategy that Kamala Harris is supposed to be employing here, is going to the governments of these other countries and looking at the, quote, root causes that draws people up into their countries and then wanting to come through to our countries. Why isn't she down there talking to the, you know, the Panamanians and the Colombians and others?
Because Kamala Harris has no intention of having anything to do with the border issue. I mean, the White House tried to dump this on her because basically she and the president kind of hate each other and their staffs do. And so they were basically throwing this hot potato into her lap. This was several months ago when they named her border czar. And she said, no, 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 I'm a root causes czar. I'm not border czar. So she went to Guatemala, gave a almost comically inept speech. And the Guatemalan president said, yeah, you know, you guys are the ones who are causing this flow because of your ridiculous policies. Fix that and then ask us to work with you, because then we would all be working toward the same goal. Now we're working at cross purposes. She would honestly just make things worse, which I think is why when the Secretary of State and the Homeland Security Secretary went down to Mexico, they didn't want the vice president with her.
Last thing, the border wall is not, you know, a panacea. It's not the be-all, end-all, but it was a massive part of the biggest reduction in crossings that we have seen in decades when President Trump built it. It's one thing for the Biden administration to let $120 million worth of panels and steel lay there in the desert going unused. It's another thing now, the word is that they are going to call for the removal of existing wall. I mean, Mark, this just has me, my jaw's on my chest. It's one thing to say we're not going to build anymore because we're diametrically opposed to building, you know, constructing things that are barriers. But it's another thing to say, tear these down. We don't have enough Border Patrol agents as it is to watch all of the, you know, 1,700 miles or whatever it is. But let's tear these down where we do have them and provide even more gaps.
Well, in the end, I'm not sure the administration would do that because that's so unbelievably stupid, politically speaking, that I just don't see them doing it, because they're essentially, if they were to do that, they would essentially just be filming a Republican campaign ad. I mean, taking the wall down. So, you know, it's bad enough, like you said, but, you know, I still don't believe that even this administration is that politically inept to do it. But, you know, I may be surprised.
Former Heisman Trophy winner Herschel Walker is a legend in Georgia. He could easily finish his life comfortably enjoying the spoils of a great football career and a booming business. With a Senate seat on the line in 2022, the state could decide who controls the United States Senate. Walker is hoping to bring that back to the GOP. Herschel joined me on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Would you explain to people that because of your own mental health background, you work a lot with our troops to make sure that they don't let mental health issues get in the way of their coming home?
Well, about 15 years ago, I started a program called Patriot Support because, you know, we have all young men and women that go over to these countries and they fight for this country here, the greatest country in the world. And some of them can adapt and some of them cannot. And they have problems and we call them crazy because they may have a mental illness. Well, I went through a mental thing in my life after football and I overcame it. And my thing is I want to get it and help the military by going by having this program called Patriot Support where I go to a base and I tell them there's no shame to ask for help. I try to talk them through it and help them to understand what's going on. And since then, I've been to over 400 bases all over the world.
You see, I think that's amazing, and I thank you for that. And people who want to get behind Herschel, head to TeamHerschel.com. TeamHerschel.com. I saw your fundraising numbers for the first quarter that you've been campaigning, Herschel. They were pretty hefty. They look like your stat sheet.
Well, they were pretty good, and I got to thank the people of Georgia and thank the United States, all the people that contributed, and I want them to know we got to continue this fight because right now you see the left, they're raising a lot of money. They want to try to keep this seat, and we got to take this seat from them. I think the people can see what's going on. And I've told them this is not something I thought I'd be doing, but it's something that I have to do. We can't just sit on the sideline, people. We got to get out there and let people know that America is a great place. Let people know the state of Georgia is a wonderful place. And the way we're going to have to do it, we've got to contribute to my campaign. And I'm going to fight for you. I'm not going to Washington just to put another feather in my cap. I don't need that. I'm going to Washington to fight for the people and let them know that they can put some integrity back into this, into our elected officials when I get there.
Now, Pastor Warnock, now Senator Warnock, had a very good quarter himself. So there's going to be a lot of negative stuff thrown at you, Herschel Walker. Are you anticipating that?
I am. I'm anticipating a lot of things. I think people see it right now. That's what's been thrown at me. And it's not about Herschel Walker. I think that's what people got to realize. Running for this office here and running for this seat is not about me. It's about the people. And whatever they throw at me, I'm going to be ready for it. You know, right now, when I decided to do it, I went through a lot of prayer. I prayed, and I'm ready. You know, I'm fighting for something that's much, much bigger than Herschel Walker.
Coming up.
When we're not allowed to acknowledge that rioting is rioting and it is bad, and that silence is not violence, but violence is violence, the world has gone mad.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Former New York Times reporter Barry Weiss became known not just for her writing, but also her scathing resignation letter to the Times and their toxically woke atmosphere. She has since been posting and writing on Substack, the account that is enormously popular with independent writers. Salem host Charlie Kirk looks at a recent television appearance where Weiss once again exposed the demons of the left.
Barry Weiss has covered a variety of different issues, from why people are suing UCLA for not wanting to discriminate against their students, and she's kind of getting a reputation as a former New York Times reporter, as someone who's actually willing to tell the truth. Someone who is willing to speak clearly and courageously. So this is a two-minute clip. I want you to listen to the whole clip. So Brian Stelter asked Barry Weiss, kind of like, oh, Barry Weiss, you say the world has gone mad. Why do you say the world has gone mad? And she owns Stelter to his face. Barry Weiss is able to say so clearly, here's why the world has gone mad. Why are you not doing anything about it? And then he challenges, says, oh, well, it's not like you're not allowed to say those things. Play Barry Weiss, some of the most beautiful 2 minutes on television of CNN being called out to their face. By the way, this is a moderate liberal. She is not a conservative. She's not a leftist. This is someone who's on the center left who worked for the New York Times. Listen.
You're right. There are tens of millions of Americans who aren't on the hard left or the hard right who feel the world has gone mad. So in what ways has the world gone mad?
Well, you know, when you have the chief reporter on the beat of COVID for the New York Times talking about how questioning or pursuing the question of the lab leak is racist, the world has gone mad. When you're not able to say out loud and in public that there are differences between men and women, the world has gone mad. When we're not allowed to acknowledge that rioting is rioting and it is bad, and that silence is not violence, but violence is violence, the world has gone mad. When we're not able to say that Hunter Biden's laptop is a story worth pursuing, the world has gone mad. When, in the name of progress, young school children, as young as kindergarten, are being separated in public schools because of their race, and that is called progress rather than segregation, the world has gone mad. There are dozens of examples that I could share with you and with
and
your viewers.
And you often say
everyone
allowed.
Everyone sort of knows this. And
you say we're not allowed, we're not able. Who's the people stopping the conversation? Who are they?
People that work at networks, frankly, like the one I'm speaking on right now, who try and claim that, you know, it was racist to investigate the lab leak theory. It was.
But
I mean,
who
let's
said
just
that
take
at CNN?
An example.
But I'm just saying that when you say allowed, I just think it's a provocative thing to say. You say we're not allowed to talk about these things, but they're all over the internet. I can Google them.
Brian,
I can find them everywhere. I've heard about every story you mentioned.
Of course.
So I'm just suggesting, of course, people are allowed to cover whatever they want to cover.
But you and I both know, and it would be delusional to claim otherwise, that touching your finger to an increasing number of subjects that have been deemed third rail by the mainstream institutions and increasingly by some of the tech companies will lead to reputational damage, perhaps you losing your job, your children sometimes being demonized as well. And so what happens is a kind of internal self-censorship. This is something that I saw over and over again when I was at the New York Times.
Why is that some of the most important piece of television? Because here you have a moderate liberal against a propagandist, Brian Stelter, who's never had an original thought in his life. He just toes the party line, does what he's told, says what he needs to say. They just give him a script. He says it. And she says no. She says, you know what? There are interesting stories that you're ignoring here on this network, CNN. For example, Hunter Biden's emails. The origins of the Fauci virus. Gain-of-function research and where the money came from. And what you see there in real time is an honest liberal. And this is the important point for those of you that are listening that have liberals in your life. Send that clip to them and say, which side are you on? Are you on the Brian Stelter side or are you on the Barry Weiss side? Are you on the side that tries to have a liberation from groupthink and the tyranny of conformity? Or are you on the side that just wants to propagandize the party line, do what you're told, never actually have any sort of comprehensive conversation of solutions, what's actually occurring in the country? And this goes to the distinction of a liberal versus a leftist. Brian Stelter is a leftist. He's a, at best, Pravda-style communication czar who goes on television where there is this question that arises, which is a very legitimate question. Are the people on television at all ever self-aware at the damage they're doing to American society? Well, Barry Weiss is one of the few that deserves to be platformed. Again, I don't agree with her on everything. But she believes in something that will help keep this country alive for the time being. Freedom of speech is not a left-wing value. It's a liberal value, small L classical liberal value. And the distinction is critical. Barry Weiss, God bless you for calling out Brian Stelter to his face.
Go to townhallreview.com for the rest of the Charlie Kirk conversation. Coming up, my friend and colleague Dennis Prager got COVID.
As a result of that announcement, there were scores of people praying for his death.
A Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. I believe strongly in the vaccine against COVID and encourage those of you who can get it. But not all agree. Some have chosen not to take any of the vaccine available for a variety of reasons. One of those is my longtime friend, fellow host on the Salem Radio Network, Dennis Prager. And now Dennis is on the mend from his own bout with COVID. Some of the reactions to that announcement have been shocking. Here's Salem host Mike Gallagher.
You see, they're taunting us. They know what they're doing. They don't care. You think Lori Lightfoot cares that there's any pushback over her celebrating a WNBA basketball team's win in the middle of a crowd indoors without her mask on? You think she cares? She just wants the police officers in Chicago fired. She wants to fire the cops for not following the vaccine mandate. But she doesn't have to follow the mask mandate that she imposed. She's Lori Lightfoot. Biden doesn't need to follow the mask mandate that he imposed. He's Joe Biden. That's the point. They know. You think Joe Biden doesn't know he's going to get photographed? He's the president of the United States. You think someone is going to take his picture as he's walking through a restaurant? Well, of course they are. He doesn't care. Heck, Lori Lightfoot's picture, the one that she's sitting there grinning ear to ear in a crowd full of masked up people. You know why the people in the stands are masked up? Because they have to, because them's the rules. But those rules don't apply to her. She's Lori Lightfoot. She's the mayor. It's rules for thee, not me. And they know it. She posted the picture. She doesn't care. But fire those police officers, fire that Washington State football coach, fire that ESPN reporter, fire that nurse, fire that state trooper, fire people who don't follow the Democrat rules. My screener, Tracy, the other day said that the left is miserable and unhappy and mean, and they want everybody to be like them. And I've been thinking a lot about Tracy's comment, because she's right. They do. They want everybody to be unhappy with them. Can you imagine being happy that somebody got sick? Do you know anybody of like-minded ideological persuasion who would be happy that somebody was sick? There was a lot of joy on social media and the internet because Dennis Prager, my friend and colleague here at the Salem Radio Network, announced he has COVID. And there's a lot of mocking and a lot of ridicule. Dennis is not real high on the vaccines, apparently, and which is his choice. So there's a lot of hilarity on the internet at his expense, which I'm sure he expected. He knows it. But I've been thinking a lot about Tracy's observation, how unhappy and miserable people on the left are. Do you know how unhappy and miserable a human being you have to be to revel in the challenges and the illness of others? Let that sink in. Here's Dennis's announcement as he's broadcasting from home, quarantined with his family with COVID. And Dennis returned to the air after 3 days off last week with this announcement.
But I'm broadcasting from my home because I'm not going into the station as I have COVID. I was tested positive last week, and I have been steadily improving. At no point was I in danger of hospitalization. I have received monoclonal antibodies. That's Regeneron. I have, of course, for a year and a half, been taking hydroxychloroquine from the beginning with zinc. I've taken Z-Pak, the erythromycin, as the Zelenko protocol would have it. I have taken ivermectin. I have done what a person should do if one is not going to get vaccinated.
Now, as a result of that announcement, there were scores of people praying for his death. There were people delighted that he's sick and they hope he's miserable. And he made a comment in a political vein during that monologue about Biden. He said something about President Biden. He said, Biden is the most evil president I've ever witnessed in my lifetime. And he was referring specifically to Biden's decision to ration the monoclonal antibodies treatment. Think about that. We've got a presidential administration, a government that is so politically biased that they are trying to prevent states like Florida, where Governor DeSantis wants to have Regeneron and has planned, and as I think in the works, maybe they're already up, Regeneron treatment centers. Because you keep hearing over and over again from people who say the monoclonal antibodies treatment works. But it's not part of the approved narrative. It's either the vaccine or else. The treatment protocols for COVID, to me, as a layperson, have been shocking. You know how many people have called this show saying that they are desperately ill? They've gone to the hospital, and the hospital sends them home saying, listen, if you can't breathe, call 911. Take some aspirin, call us in the morning. Are you kidding? This virus that attacks the body the way it does? And make no mistake, I'm so glad that Dennis is recovering and that his wife, Sue, they're recovering. But they've been sick. You can hear it in his voice. This is not easy. I don't think, some people have a relatively easy time with COVID. Many do not. Many people, you don't want to get this. And I'm sorry, I don't want to get it. I don't want to get sick. I don't want to be quarantined. I don't want to miss any work. I don't want to go through it. But if I get it, I get it. I'm going to have to deal with it. And if I get it, I'm going to be doing everything. I'm going to try to move heaven and earth to make sure I get monoclonal antibody treatment. Now, I'm a conservative on the radio. It seems like people on the left don't want me to have that treatment. Could it be that people on the left don't want conservatives to recover? That's, I think, what Dennis means about a degree of evil. Could it be that they want us to die?
Coming up, a former Superman speaks out.
Truth, justice, and the American way. That's all that I believe in, and that's where he came from. He came from America. He's uniquely American, even though he is an alien from another planet.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return.
Hi, I'm Don Crow. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The Biden administration presses hard on vaccine mandates. Major corporations and blue state governors are playing right along.
The governor cannot, by executive order, set aside federal law.
California Governor Newsom passes a law prohibiting vaccine protests.
The government can't silence speakers just because they don't like what they have to say.
We'll look at the crisis of work in the country. In industry after industry, jobs are available, especially entry-level jobs. But people aren't taking them.
I think there is a cultural shift away from labor, away from the dignity of labor, from actually the moral imperative of working.
We have all this and more. Be sure to join us and visit our website at christianoutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. DC Comics, home of Superman, has decided to remove the words American Way from the Superman motto. Dean Cain played the role of Superman in the popular television show Lois and Clark in the mid-90s. Salem's Sebastian Gorka caught up with Cain after the announcement.
Are you an ethno-nationalist because you played Superman, Dean Cain?
I've never heard that. I didn't hear that interview. An ethno nationalist?
Yeah.
No, sir. Not at all. Do I think nationalism is a bad word? No, I do not. I think be proud of your nation, represent your nation, be proud of America. Because I do love this character so much, and I do believe in truth, justice, and the American way, I'd love to see things happening where they're doing things to support this country, our way of life, yeah, our Constitution, the rule of law, things like that. So to me, it will always be truth, justice, and the American way.
Okay, so there is nobody more authorized to discuss this. So at Halloween, I don't think I ever had a Superman costume. I think I was Batman one year, but you have worn the red boots, donned the red cape. The reason that a guy who was perfect, because he is the perfect superhero, he has no weaknesses except kryptonite, he's really a male Mary Sue who can pick up mountains. The reason that he was popular despite his perfection, because most people aren't excited by perfection, is exactly because, Dean, he embodied America. Isn't that why people related to a man who came from another planet? Because he represented our values.
100%. Here is the most powerful being on the planet, raised in America, small town, heartland of America in Kansas, raised by two farmers who imbued their values. They taught him their values, their morals, and he becomes the most moral and good being on the planet. He is so powerful, he could do anything.
Right.
He could become a dictator. He could become an authoritarian. He could do anything he wants to, but instead he chooses to help the oppressed, and that is who he is. And he's truth, justice, and the American way. That's all that I believe in, and that's where he came from. He came from America. He's uniquely American, even though he is an alien from another planet. He's a, quote, immigrant. Everyone likes to try to tell me on Twitter that he was an illegal immigrant, which, of course, is untrue, because he was, if you look at foundling law in Kansas in 1930s, he was under the age of 5 and an abandoned child who came in. Yes, so he is an immigrant. He's the ultimate immigrant story, which is what the story of America is.
Hear the entire conversation between Gorka and Kane at townhallreview.com. Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schubin, producers Charlie Richards, David Bouchon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Adam Ramsey, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.